Hey y'all, it's Dr. Samina Rahman, Gyno Girl. I'm a board-certified gynecologist, a clinical assistant professor of OBGYN at Northwestern Feinberg School of Medicine, and owner of a private practice for almost a decade that specializes in menopause and sexual medicine. I'm a South Asian American Muslim woman who is here to empower, educate, and help you advocate for health issues that have been stigmatized, shamed, and perhaps even prevented you from living your best life. I'm better than your best girlfriend and more open than most of your doctors. I'm here to educate so you can advocate. Welcome to Gyno Girl Presents Sex, Drugs, and Hormones. Let's go. Hey guys, it's me, Dr. Samina Rahman, Gyno Girl. I'm so excited. I just recorded a podcast with Dr. Sadaf Lodi. She is a board-certified gynecologist, and she is a sex coach as well. She has a podcast called the Muslim Sex Podcast, and she is opening her own practice for sex med and menopause in Westchester, New York. And we talk about sex coaching and how that's really important for the biopsychosocial approach for treating sexual dysfunction in women. So she gave some great insight into that. So I'm really excited for you guys to hear this. She's a friend of mine, and she has a lot to say about how important coaching is, which it is. And she's a friend of mine, and I hope you guys enjoyed the podcast. Please like, subscribe, write a review if you like it, and also share it with a friend. I think they'll all enjoy this podcast today. So thank you so much. Welcome to another episode of Gyno Girl Presents Sex, Drugs, and Hormones. I am so excited today to have my friend and colleague joining us today to talk about sexual medicine in general, but we're going to dive deep into what sex coaching looks like and how that is so helpful in sort of the biopsychosocial approach to female sexual dysfunction. And so without any hesitation, I'm going to bring to you Dr. Sadaf Lodi. She is a board certified OBGYN and a sex med specialist, as well as a menopause specialist. She will be opening a practice very soon. In New York, Westchester area. Yeah. Westchester area. And she has her own wonderful podcast for the last few years, the Muslim Sex Podcast. She's also a certified sex counselor through ASECT, as well as a sex coach. And we are going to talk about sex coaching because we don't hear a lot about that, or we don't hear enough about that. So welcome, Dr. Sadaf Lodi.
Thank you so much for having me on, Dr. Rahman. And so I'm so excited to be on your podcast. I've had the pleasure of having you on my podcast, I don't know, I think maybe like 3-4 times, right?
Yeah, we'll link those in the notes. We talked about, I think, was it vaginismus one time? No, or Muslim sexual issues around vaginismus.
Yeah, the first one maybe was it vaginismus, and then we've talked about genital arousal.
Yes.
Perceptive genital arousal, and then we talked about the updates in menopause.
Yes, the menopause, the Menopause Society now it's called, in Philadelphia. That was in September.
Yeah. Yep. So you've been on a few times. Just for clarification, I am a sexual counselor and educator. I actually have to turn in my paperwork to get ASECT certified. So okay. I'm a little bit delinquent on that, yeah. but I am a sex counselor and educator. Mm-hmm. I took the course through the University of Michigan that actually runs for a whole year. And I did that course, which is really amazing. And that's where I did my first SAR. Mm-hmm. That we were just talking about before we started recording. And so that was really a mind-blowing experience, really interesting. It really helps you to check your biases and see, and, you know, in sexual medicine, we always say, don't yuck my yum,
yeah.
Right? So that's what it is. That was like the mantra in our sexual counseling mm-hmm. and education course. So it's really important.
And I think based on our background, we're both Pakistani Muslims, and having grown up with all the stigma around and sex shaming and all this stuff, that the SARs are pretty important for like people like us. Cause I mean, you know, we always do try to check our biases, but sometimes we struggle more than others.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, a lot of times, you know, you just haven't, like, I definitely was not exposed to any of the stuff that I was watching. And so for me, it was really an enlightening experience. And I, you know, what's really interesting about, yes. And I was really just taken aback. And, you know, we're actually divided into cohorts. And so the people that were in my SAR group were all therapists. So they're all now sex therapists. And so they all, it's so funny because when, after the first day, they're all like, Sadaf, are you okay? that was quite a lot. I said, I'm going to need some therapy after this.
I don't know.
But yeah, no, you know, it's really interesting. And you just really see where it lands in your body and how you're feeling. And, you know, it's just really an eye-opening experience. So for anyone that hasn't done it, that is interested in sexual medicine, I really highly recommend it just because it really is a mind-blowing event. I mean, it just, there's no other way to describe it. It's very different. And really, where else are you going to spend 16 hours watching porn? That's really interesting. So yeah, so I'm a sex counselor and educator through the University of Michigan. And I also am a board certified OBGYN. I'm an Ishwish fellow with, I'm an Ishwish member like Dr. Aman, but Dr. Aman is like the OG of all Pakistani, you know, female sexual educators. She's like, everyone knows Dr. Aman. Yeah. She's awesome. I love her. And also, yes, I'm a menopause society certified practitioner. So
your own practice did it. So I always get asked, like, do you know anyone in, you know, this area or that area? So we're gonna have someone great to refer to in Westchester, New York. So that's so hopefully in the really spring of this year.
Yes, inshallah. Yep. April.
So let's talk about, like, okay, so we all have our journeys. Most people that listen to this podcast or listen to your podcast or even, you know, hear any of us talk about sex med, realize that we get really no sex med education in medical school or residency actually
at all.
And so this is, you know, our experiences into sex med as we dive into it, usually come from either personal issues that we've had or patient issues that we're trying to investigate. I know for me, it was both. I talked about that in previous podcasts about having a patient I couldn't, and within the first week of my practice 10 years ago, trying to figure out what to do with her. And then I learned about Ishwish and I learned about Erwin Goldstein and I figured it out, you know, from there and has been doing it since. But I feel like we all have our stigmas that we've grown up with and the shame around it. What about you? Tell us about.
Yeah. Thank you. You know, it's funny that you should ask that because when I look back as to why I got into sexual medicine and now into menopausal medicine is because I just felt like there was a huge void in medicine, right? Patients would come to me and ask me about their libido. They'd ask me about painful intercourse and I didn't have the answer. I would, you know, just tell them sometimes I'd be like, oh, I don't know. Maybe you just need a new partner, you know, like something silly like that, because when you don't know, you don't know what you don't know.
Right.
And then once you start learning, you're like, wow, that was a really ignorant answer. You know, like,
oh my God, I can just remember some of the things that I thought or, you know, maybe have said to patients. And it's, but you know, it's an evolution. Medicine's always evolving. And the last 10 years, you know, we've learned so much more in sex med than we ever knew before. So
Yeah. So, you know, it partly came because of that. And also partly because of the fact that I myself knew nothing. Mm-hmm. Like I would say, you know, being a board certified gynecologist, you would think that we would, right, get something in our residency, which we don't. We don't get anything about menopause either.
Yeah.
And so I was like, gosh, I don't know anything about, you know, sexual medicine.
Well, you did that great TED talk where you met. I was listening to your TED talk about it.
Yeah, it's sexual medicine for physicians,
yes.
Lessons from a Muslim gynecologist.
Yes,
yes, sure. That was my TEDx talk. And that was right. That's what I talk about is just how, you know, physicians don't get the education that we need to help our patients out. And that most physicians feel pretty uncomfortable talking about sex because, again, we don't get that knowledge. We don't know how to treat. We don't know how to examine. Right? We don't know how to examine. We just take a look at the vulva and put a speculum in and say like, oh, everything looks fine. Yeah. It's, you know, I don't know you're having this pain.
Do you remember learning how we shouldn't examine the clitoris in med school? Like, don't touch the clitoris. Like, I remember people saying that to me.
I don't even think I learned the word clitoris. Like, I cannot remember. And I'm like, gosh, you know, where has this been my whole life? I feel like just so clueless about this whole thing, you know, and I was just telling you, you know, offline that like, honestly, I was calling the whole vulva region the vagina forever, you know, and I'm a gynecologist.
Yes.
So
yes,
lots of lapses in our education. And I think that that really was my passion. And also because a lot of times in our cultures and the way that we're raised, you know, where sex is seen as dirty, shameful, wrong. And if you have a high libido, you know, like, what's wrong with you? Why do you have a high libido? Right. You know, like, it's just crazy. Like, oh, you know, you're sex crazed or something like that. And it's not the case. And if you're curious about sex, then, you know, oh, you know, you don't have any shame. And why would you even talk about this? Why would you even want to know about this? Right. And right. There's so much taboo and stigma around it that I was like, you know what? I'm just going to own it.
Yes.
Like, I want to know. Yes. I want to learn more about it. I want to help patients. I want to help my Muslim community. I want to help, you know, I want to be the role model that I never had.
Right.
And I want to know that there's nothing wrong with learning about sexual education. There's nothing wrong with you. You know, if somebody experiences pleasure, there's nothing wrong with that. Somebody wanting pleasure. I mean, there's so much. And, you know, I'm going to write a book soon, hopefully, inshallah. And it's going to be called Give Yourself Permission to Experience Pleasure.
Yeah.
Right. Just give yourself permission. I mean, I think oftentimes we just hold ourselves back because of all the sex negativity that perhaps either we were raised in or have embodied through culture and through friends or whatever, that we don't give ourselves permission. And even when you talk about it with, say, like another friend, you know, they may be like, wow. You know, like I have to tell you the story. Mm-hmm. So I had this friend of my really good friend, somebody that I grew up with, you know, and I said, we were talking about it. And I said, oh, I'm going to do this podcast called the Muslim Sex Podcast, you know, because I, you know, I'm genuinely interested in sex and I just want to know more and stuff like that. And she said to me, she goes, yeah, Salaf, I know, I just assumed that you, you know, like sex or you know, you want to know more about it just because of who you are. And I just thought that was such a strange thing to say, you know, like, I think it's just because, like, if somebody automatically wants to learn more about sex, is all of a sudden, you know, that, oh, they must just really like
depressed or deprived. I mean, we were deprived of the knowledge. Like, I think that's very true. Like, we didn't know anything. I think I have a similar story from college. Like, my good friends would always be like, oh my God, you're going to be like the Muslim Dr. Ruth one day, aren't you? I mean, I guess maybe.
Well, you are, Samir.
Couple of my friends used to laugh about that. But I think that, you know, it's the same thing. Like, we're just so deprived of the education around it. And you shouldn't make something so taboo. It makes you want to know more about it.
Exactly. Exactly. But, you know, honestly, Samina, I will say that it's really after having met somebody like you, you know, like a kindred spirit that, like, you know, like, you normalize it, right? It's not like you're like a sex fiend, you know, or like, you know, somebody that's just insatiable or something. No. It's somebody that is educated, smart, wants to know more, help others so that they don't grow up with the same stigmas and taboos and, you know, don't think that there's something wrong with them because they want to know more. You know, it's about education. It's about empowerment. It's about self, you know, sexual agency. It's about all of that.
Yeah. And advocacy. Absolutely. I think that's one of the biggest things that both of us kind of strive for because we didn't have that and we didn't grow up with that. And I always tell my kids, you know, like at the end of the day, whatever you choose to be, just remember at some point you want to have a legacy. You want to be remembered for something that you contribute positively to the world or society or to somebody. So that, like, you know, that it's that you, that gives you a purpose and a drive. And I think that's kind of been ours as mutual.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And yeah, I mean, like, you know, just right. Everyone has a why. Everyone has a why of why they do anything. And I think that, you know, my why is to empower and educate women throughout the world. I mean, that's always been my goal, is to, you know, global. And I'm sure yours is also, you know, just having the background that you have, both of us being, you know, of Pakistani descent, we have a strong connection to Pakistan. And we want to empower the women that are there and so that they know about their own education. You know, I just recently had on a woman on my podcast who's a professor at St. John University in New York. And I don't know if you listen to that podcast, but she talks about how she was speaking to somebody in Pakistan and that woman told her that her husband told her that she could not have a baby unless the wife performed oral sex on him.
I mean, that's absurd.
And I just sat there with my mouth open, like, Wow. But that's what's so sad, right? There's so much in that that's just so sad. One, that she didn't know her own anatomy. She didn't understand the physiology. She didn't understand her body. Mm-hmm. The fact that he had so much control over her that he could tell her that and she would believe him. And that for him, it was about his own pleasure and not hers. I mean, there's just so much there to unpack in that one statement that I was just like, just floored by that. And I was like, gosh, you know, we have so much work to do. And
I mean, it's almost, it's ridiculous, honestly, that someone would say that. And then that people believe it because they don't know that the lack of education is so prompt. I mean, we talk about the lack of education in America, right? We get sex ed when we're learning about puberty and maybe like, you know, when you learn about STI prevention and that's it. And a lot of times people have never had sex. When you're in puberty, you know, or before puberty, you have no desire. I mean, I gave the talk for my girl in fifth grade about puberty. She's like, what is this? I don't want to talk about this. Why are you talking about this? You do gross things, you know, like, and I'm trying to normalize it for her so she doesn't, you know, have the same hiccups that I have. But you get it a couple times. And then when you're actually doing it or having issue with it, no one tells you anymore. You know, they don't tell you anything. Yeah. The same thing we always talk about with menopause. Like nobody tells you any of that. And so you just suffer in silence.
We don't learn it. Yeah. So, you know, Samina, I will actually say that. So I actually did a talk on sex education here in the United States. And we go a little bit into that with that course that I took through the University of Michigan. And, you know, and I know you're not going to be surprised about this at all, but really how much sex education you get is really dependent on your zip code.
Oh,
and where you grow up and who is in control of the Board of Education even in your 100%, district, right? 100%. And what you're learning. And most kids, right? Most kids are getting their sex education either through school, mm-hmm. through their churches, mm-hmm. or like, you know, through their friends or something like that. And most of the information that they get, depending on where they're raised, is either abstinence, mm-hmm. or it's about they're pathologizing sex, mm-hmm. like, you know, prevention of diseases, mm-hmm. or they're, you know, learning how to not get pregnant, right? But you don't learn about consent. You don't learn about domestic violence. Mm-hmm. You don't learn about pleasure,
right?
None of those things. And even the WHO in, I believe it was 2019, passed a statement that said that, you know, pleasure is part of sexual education. Absolutely. And should, you know, patients should learn about it and people are entitled. It's a human right. to have pleasure. So, you know, the fact that in here, even in the US, the sexual education is so lacking, mm-hmm. that, you know, we have patients, I'm sure you have patients, I have patients that come to me that were raised here and don't realize they have three holes, yes. right? That there's a urethra, a vagina, and a rectum, right. that they think that they pee and they have a baby through the same hole, right? All of those things. And it's because of the lack of education of our own bodies, right. that we don't even know that those things exist. Absolutely. So really,
I mean, I grew up in the South, so I mean, we were heavily not, you know, told about anything. So
right. And I'm sure you're probably your sex education was about abstinence.
Absolutely.
I'll tell you.
And yeah.
I never even went. Mm-hmm. My parents didn't sign the paper. I knew nothing. Nothing. And then I thought like maybe when I go to med school I'll learn something.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
And I learned 2 hours.
Yeah.
And it was like Masters and Johnson, like, you know, linear sexual response
right.
cycle.
Right.
And that was research done in the 1960s on white men, right? And then it wasn't until Kaplan in the 1970s that included desire in that sexual response cycle. And it wasn't until 2001 that Rosemary Bassin came along, and she is in British Columbia, and came up with that female circular sexual response cycle. And it wasn't until then that women were actually included in the sexual response cycle. And we learned that emotional intimacy was important, and we learned about spontaneous and responsive desire. We learned about the biopsychosocial model and how so many different things can affect our sexual response. Mm-hmm. And depending on what's going on in our lives and whether or not we feel into it or not, and that arousal and desire don't have to happen at the same time, and that one can come before the other, and that's okay.
Right.
And the degree of how much we enjoy sex has to do a lot with what our relationship looks like with our partner and how safe we feel with them and what type of emotional intimacy we have with them. So it's a lot.
Yeah. I mean, you know, to us now, it seems like that's obvious, right? Like sex is not just like, you know, whatever. But I think, you know, it was actually a revolutionary thing to come out and, you know, teach this and for people to learn this, that it's not linear, that it's not based on, you know, women are not small men.
Yeah.
It wasn't 1993 until that we, you know, even were allowed into medical research, right? So that's not that long ago.
Right. It's not. It's not, right? That's crazy.
Yeah, it's really crazy.
But it's true. And yeah, we have so much, so far to go yet.
I totally, and I think we're just at the tipping point, but bringing up all that with the biopsychosocial approach that we always talk about, let's talk about coaching and how that fits into it.
Yeah, so definitely. So coaching is all about, you know, so I did coaching through Rutgers University, and coaching is all about helping patients move forward in their lives, mm-hmm. right? It could be that they're stuck in whatever situation they feel, and how do we move forward? So as it relates to sex and sexual intimacy, it's about how to move patients from, say, sex negativity mm-hmm. or thoughts that they have about sex, and how to get them to move forward so that they, if not sex positive, at least sex neutral.
Right.
Right. Mm-hmm. And then eventually they get to sex positive, because to move from sex negative to sex positive is a huge leap. Mm-hmm. And it takes time.
Right.
And it takes time to work through your thoughts, and then how those thoughts affect you, and those turn into feelings, and how based on our feelings, we act. Right. Right. So if we're thinking in our head that sex is wrong, it's shameful, it's dirty, then the feelings we may get, you know, we may feel ashamed, we may feel guilty. And then the way that we act is perhaps, you know, we don't engage in sex, or perhaps we pull away when, you know, our partner or our spouses want to engage in sex, or maybe we have vaginismus, mm-hmm. right? Where we were taught for so long that sex was wrong, that you don't learn about it, you don't even look at your own anatomy. Mm-hmm. And then when it comes time to consummate that marriage, mm-hmm. then all of a sudden you just can't, because you just, you know, your body is reacting to those thoughts that you've kept and you've held on for so long.
Right.
So the job of a sex coach is almost similar, I would say, to a sex therapist, but really we're not the same. Therapists will really delve into the past, right? And kind of untangle the trauma perhaps that patients may have had, or the abuse or whatever that that they may have had in the past, and then kind of stick to the past, right? Because they're dealing with all of the past trauma.
Right.
Whereas coaches will maybe dip their toes into the past a little bit, but really focus on how can I help this patient, mm-hmm. this client move forward in their life so that they can have, in this case, you know, the sexual life that they want. How can they be more present mm-hmm. for their partner? How can they engage more fully in their sexual relationship?
That's wonderful. And you do have a sex coaching practice as well. So I should mention that,
yeah.
that you are taking clients for sex coaching.
Yeah.
And so I think that's a very interesting perspective, because, you know, I think a lot of times people do get stuck in like how they have traditionally believed or whatever the case may be, and they don't know how to move forward. And
yeah.
so it's really learning those tools that you talk about, and what kind of things do you usually work with them? Is it like mind body? Is it?
It is more, it is a lot of mind body. It has to do with, you know, really the thoughts that we've had. I think one of the best things that a former coach of mine told me is that, and also like a book that I've read, that it's called Soundtracks, and I'll get into that a little bit, but a former coach that I used to use, you know, she used to say to me, which I thought was so helpful, is that we get to choose our thoughts, right? Mm-hmm. A lot of times we have like a gazillion thoughts going through our head racing, and we're so busy and we don't stop to think. We just think that these thoughts come and we don't have any control over them. But that's not true. Mm-hmm. You know, what we can do is that the thoughts that come, we can actually stop them and we can change them. For example, you know, a lot of people experience imposter syndrome, mm-hmm. right? So like when they're about to go speak on a stage or something like that, they may, you know, something in their head may be saying like, oh, you're not meant to be on the stage, or you're not good enough, or your education's not good enough, mm-hmm. right? So at that point is where you stop. You have to stop yourself, your thoughts, and say that, you know, and you can call your thoughts that are always holding you back. You can make a name for them, like, I don't know, Diana or something like that, right? And you can be like, Diana, you know, I understand that you're there. Mm-hmm. But you're not going to inhibit what I'm going to do today. So you can have your seat and you can be there, but I'm not going to let your voice tell me what's going to happen and what's going to be my reality.
Wonderful.
Right? Yeah. And so then that's how you kind of move past those thoughts. So you at least you acknowledge, because sometimes you can't get rid of those thoughts, right? They're just going to be there. So, but it's okay. You just give them a back seat. They don't have to be the one in the driver's seat telling you where you're going to go and how things are going to show up, right? You get to choose. And I think that's what's so empowering with the coaching is that you get to choose your thoughts. You are not a reflection of your thoughts. You get to choose your thoughts. You get to decide how you are present. You get to decide where they play in your life, right? And I think that that is really, really what's empowering. And oftentimes I think that, you know, like, for example, I had another patient or a client come in and she was talking, she was experiencing vaginismus, which she was actually from a conservative Christian background. And so she and I were talking. And so in her head, so she was having actually secondary vaginismus. So she was always able to have sex before when she was married and in a relationship, you know, where she was. She was married, but now that she was divorced and now in this new relationship, she was experiencing vaginismus and she couldn't figure it out. So then she and I started to talk and I asked her, you know, were you able to ever have a relationship where you were able to have sex without pain, you know, without your muscles tightening up? And she said, yes, when I was married before, you know, she has children, whatever. And she said, it was never a problem before. And I said, well, what are your thoughts right now about sex? You know? And she said, well, I guess I feel like it's wrong. And I said, well, why do you feel that it's wrong? And she said, well, the way that I was raised is that I believe that sex is only for marriage. And right now she wasn't married. She was dating this individual. And she said that, you know, because in my mind that sex is only for marriage and I'm trying to have sex with this individual, her body is like taking over, right? So her thoughts in her head are like, this is wrong. This is shameful. This is dirty. I shouldn't be having this because I'm not married to this individual. So then her body is reacting to those thoughts.
Right.
And so when we started to talk about that, she had this huge aha moment where she realized where her thoughts were coming from. And for her, it was important because it was so important. That was like a core value of hers. And she realized that she was, for her, she wasn't acting according to her core values. And because there was a disconnect between her actions and what her values were, her body was stopping it. So then what she decided is that she was actually going to wait until she got married. And so she said that, you know, she, for her, it was important to be true to her values and true to her religion and whatever she was experiencing.
Sure.
And just that knowledge of why she was experiencing, because she thought there was something wrong with it. You know, she was older now. She was, you know, in menopause. She thought maybe that's why, you know, and it could be, right? We have, as you and I both know, you have decreased lubrication. There's decreased blood flow. You know, she wasn't on her vaginal estrogen. You know, there were other things going on as well. So, you know, of course, I asked her to, you know, meet with her gynecologist to be evaluated. Of course, going back to the biopsychosocial model, and this is why I'm so grateful for all my education, because I understand like the whole picture. And so I asked her to be evaluated by her gynecologist to make sure there was nothing going on with the vulva and any type of infection or anything like that that she was having. And then to also meet with a pelvic floor therapist who could slowly try to help her with, you know, dilation and so that she wouldn't experience pain with dilation, but then also to work with that cognitive aspect of it, to see where her thoughts were coming from and see how they were playing out in her body and in her relationship. And once she understood that, because for her, the biggest thing was that she just couldn't understand why she was always able to have sex before and why now in this new relationship, she just couldn't have sex. And to her was, you know, this like huge disconnect and just not making sense. So we were, she and I together were able to put the pieces together for her to understand. And so now she was living more closer to her own values, what were, what was important for her, you know, not for me or anyone else, but for her. And she decided that she would, you know, obviously continue to see her boyfriend and now her fiance, but only go as far as she felt it was right to go. And that she wanted to actually wait until she got married, even though she was older, you know, she was in her 60s, so that she wouldn't be in, you know, not, so that she would be in concordance with her own values. And so that's how that coaching helped her.
That's amazing. Now that's, again, we always talk about the biopsychosocial. So we know it's a multimodal approach and we have to address all the issues when it comes to sexual function. And the coaching element is really big. I think, you know, some people need sex therapists, some people need sex coaching, some people need both. And I think both can work concurrently with each other as well. Yeah. Some many issues, but I think that's wonderful that you're able to do this for your patients or and clients that you see, and maybe both. I don't know how you navigate that in your new practice.
I know. Yeah. Yeah. There is definitely, you know, there is a coaching aspect of it, which is, you know, separate from, because we do have to separate the medical aspect of it from the coaching aspect. So I actually do have two separate businesses. Right. But that, you know, in sometimes it is, you know, and I just to even talk to patients, you know, I'll just ask them about their thoughts regarding certain things, especially when I see that there's nothing anatomically wrong, but just that they may have thoughts that something is wrong. For example, I had a patient come and she's experiencing infertility. And she was actually of Pakistani descent. And she told me that, you know, and she wondered why she kept getting bacterial vaginosis over and over again. And so we were talking about sex. And I asked her, I said, so what do you do after you have sex? You know, how are you cleaning up and stuff like that? So she was telling me that she was using Dettol to clean her vulvar region. Oh. And so I told her, please don't do that. You know, you're ruining that. You're changing the flora of your vagina, and that's why, you know, this bacteria is overgrowing. And
right.
You know, but she didn't know that, and she was taught that, you know, after you have sex, you're just all, you know, you're dirty, and so you really need to clean with something very like abrasive right. and like, you know, really clean all that stuff out.
Get that sperm unless you're trying to get pregnant.
Yeah. Right, exactly. But, you know, it's like things like that where, you know, you really have to meet individuals where they are and, you know, what they're thinking about and how you can help them move forward. And, you know, sometimes patients don't think of it as a problem, which is fine. You know, it's, again, it's all up to patient preference and right. what they want and what they don't want. But they really do want to move forward in their lives and, you know, and in the way that they perceive sex. I mean, so many of my friends that I know, right? They can't even, they don't talk about sex. Mm-hmm. Definitely not amongst friends, right? I mean, nobody's telling you to talk about, you know, specifics, but even like in generalities, they don't right. talk about it because they have so much stigma and taboo and shame around it.
Yeah.
And they feel it's wrong and dirty that they don't. And it's not just, you know, and I would say that it's not just, you know, people grown up in conservative cultures. Mm-hmm. I would say that society in general is very uncomfortable talking, discussing sexual health.
Sexual health, yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. And most physicians, right? Like I would say that a lot of physicians, because we're just not trained. Right. And so they just feel uncomfortable.
And some of them are truly uncomfortable. So they won't talk about it even if they got the training, I think. Mm-hmm. But I think that's the problem that most of our patients experience, right? They're 6, 7, 8 providers later or, you know, clinicians, and they finally maybe get help, but it's always uncomfortable.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, thank you so much. You know, we've learned so much about coaching today, so that's wonderful. If you want to see Dr. Sadaf Lodhi as a patient in Westchester or as a, probably remotely too, right, as a coach, you can, we'll have her information in the show notes, so that will be helpful for you to get access to her.
Yeah.
Please tune into her podcast as well, the Muslim Sex Podcast. You always say it's not, you're a Muslim and you want to talk about sex, and that's why it's called the Muslim Sex Podcast.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. I just happen to be
we don't set Muslim topics or sex.
Yeah, that's right. Exactly. So it's, you know, and that's what I definitely want people to know, that it's not about Islam. It's not really about Muslims, although I do touch on that, of course, because I am Muslim. But, you know, it's just really the podcast itself is about relationships. It's about intimacy. It's about sexual health mm-hmm. and how all of those things come together, right? And it's really like a holistic approach to sexual health. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I've had multiple physicians on. I've had great physicians on like yourself, you know, talking about really important topics such as persistent genital arousal disorder. We've talked about vaginismus. We've talked about menopause. Mm-hmm. You know, I've had other physicians come on, talk about how depression or anxiety relates to relationships. I've had people talk about how GI disorders and diseases can affect intimacy. I mean, there's so many things. I've had a sex therapist come on, talk mm-hmm. about kink. I've had another sex therapist come on today, talk about purity culture mm-hmm. and how that affects individuals' sense of self and their sexual agency. Mm-hmm. Which was really interesting. And I just recently also had a director come on that created the documentary Periodical, where she talks about periods and menstrual health and how taboo that is. And so really and I've had Dr. Blooming come on, talk about menopause. So it's really an all-encompassing podcast. It just happens to be called the Muslim Sex Podcast because I am a Muslim woman that talks about sex.
Yes. All right. So thank you for coming on today. It was very helpful, and I think my audience will really enjoy that and will hopefully tune into your podcast as well.
Thank you so much for having me on, Gyno Girl.
Absolutely. Again, I'm here to educate so you can advocate for yourself. Thanks for joining me in Gyno Girl Presents Sex, Drugs, and Hormones. And please tune in next week for my next episode.
If you have a second, please subscribe to this podcast. I'd love for you to be a follower and learn as much as you can about the things that we're going to talk about with all the people on our journey. Please review us on Apple or Spotify or wherever you listen to podcasts. These reviews really help. Review us, comment, tell me what else you want to hear. To get more information, my practice website is www.cgcchicago.com. My website for Gyno Girl is www.gynogirltv.com. My Instagram is Gyno Girl, so please follow me for some good content. Additionally, I have a YouTube channel, Gyno Girl TV, where I love to talk about all these things on YouTube. And please subscribe to my newsletter, Gyno Girl News, which will be available on my website. I will see you next time.